Zion Cheshvan, seventh day of the month of Cheshvan, is, so in Israel, in Eretz Yisrael, they start praying for rain. They say tonight, they start the same Talamata Mubracha, they start praying for rain. We don't, until
December's
the beginning of Tkufas Teves, which is December, beginning of December. And the reason that's given, the Gemara explains that the reason why they didn't start asking for rain until the 7th of Cheshvan was to give time for all those people who had come for the holiday to Yerushalayim, all those who had come to Jerusalem, to the temple, for the holiday, that even those living outside the land should be able to make it home to cross the Euphrates and make it back to Babylon, which was the furthest. There were perhaps people who traveled further, but that was so in order that the last person should be able to make it home, the last person to the end of Israel, from one end of Israel to the other, the last person to be able to make it home, they waited until the 7th of Cheshvan, which gave them 15 days.
Which is tonight,
and then they would start asking for rain. So the Rebbe says that according to the traditional custom that is brought that on the, that after Simchas Torah, that in certain places they had the custom that at the end of Yom Tov, after Simchas Torah, they would proclaim, they would say out loud, and proclaim the verse V'Yakov Halach L'Darkin. It's referring to Yaakov after he parted from Esav. It says that Yaakov went on his way. So the Rebbe explains that this custom has to do with the idea that we spend the month of Tishrei in a completely very highly spiritually charged atmosphere. We're involved in, we go from Rosh Hashanah, we go to the 10 days of repentance, and then we have Yom Kippur, and then we're preparing for the circus holidays, and then we have the holiday itself, Shmini Atzeres, Sofas Torah. We're engaged, we're involved in primarily spiritual pursuits. And now, as the expression that I would always quote, is, you know, now it's time to pack up all your bags, pack up everything that you gathered spiritually in this month, and take it home. Let's bring it back to everyday life, bring it back to your ordinary, normal, daily living, and to bring that level of spirituality, that level of sanctity into your everyday life. So to take that baggage, take it home, and then when you get home, you have to unpack it and put it to use. So the Rebbe says, that being the case, it comes out that the real beginning of the V'Yakov Halach L'Darkei, the real beginning of the process of unpacking the bags, really starts on the 7th of Cheshvan. It was still the 7th of Cheshvan, people were still traveling home from Yerushalayim. So people had not yet gone back to their old homes, their old routines. They were still involved in the holiday, because traveling to and from the temple is still being connected to and involved with the holiday. And the fact that Rebbe quotes a halacha, which says that that when a person refers to in a deed, in a document, he refers to after a period after the holidays, so legally that period extends all the way till the 7th of Cheshvan, because people are still in the atmosphere. It says in Halacha, in Jewish law, that people are still in the atmosphere of the holidays, because they haven't, because there was part of the trip included in traveling for holidays, part of the trip home is part of that atmosphere, and therefore it still has legally, in certain ways, a connection to the holiday. So the beginning of actually going home and And being involved in daily mundane activities, which seem to have no special spiritual significance, which are not especially sanctified, and to bring the spirituality and sanctity that one gathered and one absorbed in the month of Tishrei into one's life, that really begins on the 7th of May.
So if I haven't done it up till now, it's okay.
So the Rebbe says, connects what's the connected request for rain?
Start the night.
Chaim Chaim. Chaim.
We pick a good night.
What's the request for rain or something?
The connection for the request to rain is that that's Canadian.
Whatever that is.
Canadian.
It's cold.
It's cold?
Yeah.
Not a Scotch drink.
It's not supposed to be.
Benedictine. No, it's fine. Don't worry.
Sorry.
I had a period of my life where I drank a lot of vodka. And vodka.
Well, the connection to rain that we find in the description of creation, it says that if no rain had fallen, because there was no man yet to work the earth. In other words, even though God had created on the second day of creation, on the third day of fourth days of creation, there was already the earth and all the different plant life already existed on the third day. But it says no rain had fallen until man was created to work the earth. So Hasidus explains that what's the connection? What's the connection between the fact that the man wasn't created yet? That's why no rain had fallen. So Hasidus explains that rain is associated with human effort, as opposed to do, which comes entirely from above. Now the truth is that rain also comes entirely from above, but the concept is that, well, for instance, we find that the Holy Land is described as a land which has God's eyes upon it from the beginning of the year till the end of the year. That God's eyes are upon the land of Israel all the time. And our sages explain, what does that mean? As opposed to any other land, why is it? So our sages explain that there's a direct relationship with God in the land of Israel more than any other land.
Don't stop the fire count.
Because the land of Israel is completely dependent on rain. Completely dependent on rain for its crops. Egypt, other countries that have irrigation, other countries that have Egypt has the Nile. In fact, there is no rain in Egypt. It draws the water taken from that which is already to be found on the earth. The land of Israel is dependent on its water supply entirely from water that comes from above. So which means that it's a different kind of relationship with God than the land of Egypt.
But there's lakes in Israel too.
There's no natural lakes.
Lake Kinneret.
Kinneret, okay. But Kinneret is also not a natural lake. It's a runoff from a river that they... I don't know exactly how it works, but it's not a natural phenomenon.
Just come from the spring above the Hermon. It's naturally occurring.
Yeah, from above, but it's not a natural.
Yeah, it's not like it came from.
Right, doesn't come from. It doesn't come from the earth.
That's usually how lakes form.
The snow that melts and runs down and the springs also.
There are springs in around Syria.
Around Syria, but it's all from outside. It's not. It doesn't come from underneath, from under the ground. So, you have. So, there's a totally different kind of relationship with God, because in a situation where man finds himself in a situation where he feels himself entirely self-sufficient, so he's not aware of his connection to God. He's not aware of his dependency upon God. But in the land of Israel, where you're totally dependent on rain in order to be able to produce the crops and to be able to sustain yourself, totally dependent on rain, so the level of connectedness to God, the relationship to God, is much more revealed and manifest than in a place where you don't have that kind of dependency. And that was why when the prophet Shmuel, Samuel, went to the show the people that God was angry, so he asked that it rain in the summertime. That in Israel was no such thing that it should rain in the hot season. Was no such thing that it should rain. So to show that it would rain not in an ordinary time, that was a clear indication to show. That was the means to show how God is directly involved in the lives of the Jewish people. That there is an interrelationship, and also between your behavior and the rain. So it says that man was not around. God didn't send rain because man was not yet created to work the earth. It doesn't just mean to physically labor the earth. It means spiritually to work and serve God and be deserving of God's blessings in the form of rain. But that's why there was no rain. Rain is something that only comes when there is a recipient. There really exists a recipient that, to one degree or another, is deserving of this race. But that's why on Zion Cheshvan we started asking for rain. The Zion Cheshvan is the time when the people finally came back from their spiritual trek to the temple, to the Holy Land, to Jerusalem, and everyone finally came home and is now starting the process of working in the world, of working in the physical, bringing that holiness and spirituality into their physical, mundane lives. That is when we start asking for rain, because that is when we reveal our capacity to bring down godly blessings into the world through our physical labors.
Shalachaim already?
Shalachaim. You always walk in Shalachaim
again?
What's the meaning of that? What does Rashi say?
Is it redundant?
Special stress.
one of the great mysteries.
Zion Chazan always comes out in Parshas Lech Lecha. In the weekly portion of Lech Lecha, we find the first interaction between God and Abraham. And he says, leave, go forth from your land, from your birthplace, from your father's home, to the land that I will show you. It would seem to be that we know that the Torah portion that's read at any given time of the year, the Shalah Kodesh explains that there's a link, there's a connection between the Torah portion and the events, the spiritual events of that time of the year. Each holiday is connected with the Torah portion that's read at that time and so on. Then he says it would seem that the way we're explaining Zion Cheshvan would seem to be the opposite of Lech Lecha. Here, Lech Lecha, God is telling Abraham, go out of the home of your father, this pagan idol worshiper, and go out of this land full of pagan idol worshippers that are trying to kill you for serving God, and go to the Holy Land. Go to the land that I will show you. Go to the Holy Land. Establish yourself in the Holy Land. So it would seem to be the opposite. Here we're saying that Zion, the significance of Zion Cheshvan is that even those people who are living on the absolute outskirts of the Holy Land, and even those people who live outside of the Holy Land have already crossed the river on their way home from spending a whole month in the environment of the Beis HaMikdash, of the Temple, of Yerushalayim, and the significance of Zion Cheshvan is that this is the day they've made it home. By now they've gotten home, back to their normal everyday habits and normal everyday lives and so on. It seems to be the opposite of what God is telling Abraham, to go out of your natural habitat, to go out of your natural, your home, your past, your background, and go to a whole new land that I will show you. So how is it, what is the connection that we find? So how is it that Zion Cheshvan always falls out in the week of Parshas Lech Lecha if they seem to be of opposite? The significance of each date seems to be the reverse. One seems to be addressing that man has to lift himself up from his lowly, ordinary, mundane activities which pull him down, and lift himself up and go higher, connect to spirituality, to sanctity, to godliness. And Zion Cheshvan, on the other hand, seems to be the message of taking spirituality, sanctity, godliness, in which you spent the whole month in that environment, and bringing it back into your normal, everyday life. So in order to understand this, we have to first understand the significance of why is it that the first encounter we have in the Torah describing the encounter between God and Abraham, the first time we meet Avraham Avinu, is at age 75. This is a man who at age 3 began the process of recognizing his creator. A man who stood up to the mightiest king who ruled the entire world, Nimrod, and he stood up to his own father and he broke the idols. He stood up to this mighty king and refused to bow to him and was thrown into a fiery furnace, and he survived. And he made a tremendous spiritual revolution in the world in his time. And yet, the Torah doesn't tell us anything about that. That, all those accounts were transmitted to us through the oral Torah. In the written Torah, we first encounter Avraham Avinu, we first encounter Avraham at age 75, where God tells him to leave your land, your birthplace, and your father's home. Why is it that our first encounter with Avraham, we don't hear anything about all his tremendous accomplishments, his years of struggle, and standing up to an entire world as one lone man against the world. The first time you hear of him is when God says to him, go to the land that I will show you. Basically, the way Chassidus explains the significance of this encounter, of this commandment, go forth from your land, from your birthplace, from your father's home. Is that when we look at a human being, when we look at a human being and we try to determine who this person is, what this person is capable of, what's this individual's potential. So we look at the person as a composite of all his past experiences, his environment, his background, his experiences, his heredity. We look at all of these factors in an attempt to determine, based on where you're coming from and what and the gifts that you have, what is your potential, what are you capable of achieving. Sometimes people have things in their past which hold them back. People have things in their past which are burdensome and baggage and hold them back. So we have all kinds of innovative therapies and processes in which people go back into their past and do their inner child work, blah blah blah, and they're able to, but again, to experience the past from a new perspective, and therefore be able to use your past as a building block into the future, instead of your past being a stumbling block. If you go back to your past and you gain a positive view of it, and you get over the things that you should have gotten over years ago, and you deal with them, so then you could take the positive things from your past and build on that a future. So who you are and what you are and what you're capable of is very much dependent on who your parents are, what kind of genetic, hereditary gifts you were given, very much on your environment in which you grew up in, and also on the experiences and the messages that you received from your environment, from your parents and your environment, and your experiences. That's basically how the world views the process of human life, that each step in growth progressively follows the step before. So childhood is supposed to be the building, like the foundation for adulthood, and you're supposed to, if the more positive experiences you have in your childhood, the more positive messages and lessons you've got, the more you will be able to develop yourself and achieve and succeed in the future. So being 1 year old prepares you for being 2 years old, which prepares you for 3, 5, 10, 20, so on and so forth. Each thing is supposed to be, it's a process. One thing leads to the next. But at the same time, the very nature of this process is extremely limiting. In other words, who you are and what you are is determined by where you came from, where you grew up, and what you experienced. That defines you. Now there are people who, based on who their parents are, what environment they grew up in, and their experiences, they can accomplish tremendous things. There are people who have great potential, and there are people who don't have such great potential. There are people who, based on who they are and where they're coming from, could accomplish tremendous things, and there are people who, not necessarily, they can accomplish good things. Some people accomplish great things. Some people accomplish tremendous things. It all depends on who you are, where you're coming from, and so on. Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah to the Jewish people, the power of Torah and Mitzvahs, is not something that is an aid, is a tool to aid in one's spiritual development. That not only that you should be able to develop your spiritual potential. There are many people who view the Torah and the mitzvahs as these are the tools to develop a person's spiritual potential. Besides the different potentials that a person has in worldly affairs and issues, people have certain spiritual potential. And that spiritual potential is developed by Torah and mitzvahs. So Chassidus explains that's a mistake. Torah and mitzvahs are not there to help a person develop his spiritual potential. Torah and mitzvahs are there to enable a person to transcend his spiritual potential. Not to develop and fulfill his spiritual potential, but to transcend, to go beyond whatever a finite human being's finite spiritual, limited spiritual potential is by definition limited. It's finite. The experience of Matan Torah, of the giving of the Torah and the mitzvahs, are meant to enable a person to totally go out of who they are and what and how they see themselves. To completely go out of those things which define the human being and the human experience. To transcend the human experience and to connect to the divine experience.
Why are you saying the spirit? Can I ask you a question? Why are you saying that spiritual experience is a human experience? Why, when you say there's spiritual experience, do you not imply that's above physical?
It is above physical. But so the person is naturally born with a natural physical potential and natural spiritual potential. Those are inborn. Everyone has natural spiritual potential.
Okay.
We don't hear about Avraham Avinu till age 75, because till age 75, Avraham Avinu was developing his natural spiritual potential. It was a lot of hard work. It took a lot of self-sacrifice. It was a tremendous, awesome struggle. But basically what he was doing was developing his spiritual potential. That's what he was doing.
Preparing himself for Torah later. Preparing himself for Torah
right.
Later.
So he first was going through the process of developing his own potential, his own innate inborn potential. When God comes to Abraham, the first time we meet God is, the first time we meet Abraham in the Torah is as the beginning of the preparation for Matan Torah. The first commandment. For the first time, Abraham is doing something because he was commanded to. What he's doing is a divine commandment. It's not a person, a spiritual pilgrim on a spiritual sect. The material, not only beyond the material, but even beyond the spiritual, to connect to the divine. Because ultimately, even spirituality is a creation of God. God himself is not a spiritual being. Not only is God not a material being, God is not a spiritual being. Spirituality is also a creation. So what Avraham, until age 75, had experienced the highest level of spirituality that he could attain with his inborn natural talents, developed to their fullest. Now he's ready to embark on a whole new process. The beginning of Matan Torah, meaning the beginning of relating to God through divine commandment. The beginning to already to function in the world and act in the world, and those actions are now divine. So Hashem says to him, so what's the first commandment? The first commandment is, go out of your land. Your desires, your experiences, go out of your birthplace, your environment, the things that shaped you and molded you. Go out of your father's home, your heredity. Go out of all those things that define you as a human being. Because if you're going to become a divine being, then you have to go out of those things that define you as a human being. So materially, it refers to the land, your experiences, your environment, and your heredity. Spiritually, it refers to, Chassidus explains, go out of your eretz. It's from the same root as the word ratzon, which means desire. Go out of your desires. Go out of your birthplace refers to your spiritual source. That's your birthplace, your spiritual source. And Beis Avicha is to even go out of that level of transcendent spirituality, just like a home is something which encompasses the individual, that everything that's contained inside. So too there are higher levels of spirituality, which is not only your spiritual source, which you're consciously aware of, but even the transcendent spirituality, which you are aware of on a different level of awareness, even that you have to go out. You don't have to go out of the things that define you as a material being, you also have to go out of the things that define you as a spiritual being. Because now we're talking about connecting to the divine, connecting to God. Connecting to God means you have to let everything else go.
What do you mean, go out of your desires? Because he was a pretty holy guy.
Right, go out of your spiritual desires, your spiritual ambitions. He was a man with spiritual goals and ambitions. Go out of that means to go out of your spirituality. Not just go out of your materialism. Go out of your spirituality.
Yes, sir.
You want a code word? So what does that mean? But the purpose, that if God wanted to create divine beings, he could have created divine beings. If his whole purpose was creating these human beings that are by definition not divine, that are human, that are finite, that are limited, so that they should raise themselves up and achieve a state of divinity, to be completely one with the divine, he didn't have to go through the whole process of making the world. What did he need a world for? That was the point. If that was the purpose, he didn't need this whole world. The fact that our sages tell us that the purpose of creation was for the sake of this world. That God wants that after you transcend your humanity and you transcend your spirituality to connect to divinity, now you have to go back. Take that bond, that connection with the divine, and bring divinity into your spiritual life and into your human life. That the commandment of Lech Lecha is a two-way trip, not a one-way trip. That you should just leave, transcend your own natural finite limitations and connect with the divine, and therefore be completely removed from the world. The point is that after you establish that bond, and after you establish that connection, you have to take that divinity and bring it back into the world. Which is something that Avraham Avinu was given only a limited ability to accomplish. Because he did not have the power to take physical objects and transform them into divine objects. As we do after Matan Torah. As we do by writing tefillin in a proper way, by writing a Sefer Torah properly, by doing various mitzvahs with physical objects, we take those physical objects and we infuse them with divinity. We infuse them with God's sanctity and God's reality.
Reveal the divinity. There's a difference.
Yeah, but Chassidus says, describes the two-step process. I'm shocked of his goals. Why Chassidus talks about being mounted on the coast instead of just revealing is another fact. But we draw down godliness into the physical eye. The ultimate fulfillment, the ultimate completion of this process, of the process of the capacity that a Jew has to transcend his own natural limitations, material or spiritual, to connect to God, and to bring God down in God and godliness down into the physical world in a way that imbues and infuses his spiritual and material life with godliness, with holiness. So it comes out that really it's all one and the same trip. This trip is really one and the same. So when we say that Zion Cheshvan always comes out in Parshas Lech Lecha, is because the whole purpose of the commandment of Lech Lecha, the purpose of the commandment of going out of your natural, your human affairs, and even your daily spiritual affairs, and to connect to the divine reality. The purpose of that is that you should turn around and bring it home. So Zion Cheshvan, which represents the bringing home of the connection to God, which was established and experienced in through the process of the holidays of the month of Tishrei, the ultimate purpose of all that was to bring it home, to take it back, and that is fulfilled on Zion Cheshvan. But that is all describing the process. It begins with Avraham Avinu, and it continues constantly, on and on, through Mount Torah, through thousands and thousands of years. It's an ongoing process. And every year, we go down, we get it, we're involved in our worldly affairs, and then we have this process of the month of Elul, which is first establishing an awareness of God while still involved in our worldly affairs, and then following, connecting more and more to God through the month of Tishrei by putting aside all our worldly affairs and being involved in the spirit of Yom Tov, of the days of awe, and then the process of going back and bringing that back into our lives. That's a cycle that's been going on for thousands of years. On and on. The ultimate fulfillment of this whole cycle, of this ongoing process, is that we should one day establish a world which is a divine world, a godly world, which seems a contradiction in terms. The definite world means a limited, finite, created being. God is an infinite, non-created being, but a being which creates. To talk about a godly world seems to be a contradiction in terms. And yet the ultimate fulfillment, the ultimate point of this whole process is to resolve that conflict and make this world a divine world, a godly world. So how do we, when we're standing at the end of that process, what is the difference between when we were at the beginning of the process and the way we do things when we're all the way at the end of the process? What is the difference between the way we did things when we were first starting and the way we do things when we're finishing up, we're at the end, it's almost all over, and we're almost at the, completely completed the process of making the world a divine world. So what's the difference? It seems to me we're just doing the same things over and over. And if anything, in certain ways it looks like we're doing the same things over and over, in some ways not as effectively as earlier generations. We generally look back to earlier generations and say, oh, they were much more pious, they were much more religious, they were much more spiritual, they were much more refined.
Jewish.
So in what way do we have the sense that we're all the way at the end of the process? And what is it that those who live at the end of the process are supposed to be doing? Good question. Chaim.
I'd like to ask you a question.
He just asked a question.
I go to school, in Manhattan. Go to school in Manhattan. And And
L'chaim.
I had a conversation tonight with one of my friends over there, this Frum, who's been Frum his whole life. He's like modern Orthodox. And he told me about like a phenomenon that goes on with him and all his colleagues, all his, that they get hired to work in a big law firm. And he was telling me, he was coming to me with a question that he's having in his mind. He says, I have to decide whether or not I'm going to take my yarmulke off during work. He says, everybody else does it. So now my feeling is that it affected me and I felt sick. Because his reasoning is that it could affect, the reasoning is that the rav, whatever rav he goes to, gives the heter because it's a possibility that affects his parnasa. And that's the heter that, that all these people get. So, the way I'm going at it now is that it's bothering me. And I'm asking you, what's the appropriate way to look at the situation and how can I have a positive effect rather than just being, just thinking of all the ways that this person is wrong and how he's, how his view of Yiddishkeit is so skewed.
Not sure what you want. Things like this. The thing is like this. You find a very strange thing in Judaism. It says that a person, when he gets older, supposed to repent everything that he did in his childhood. Even the sins that you did as a child, when you get older, you're supposed to repent. So it sounds like double jeopardy. You're not responsible till you're 13, you're not responsible for your actions. Then once you become responsible for your actions, you're not only are you responsible for your actions after 13, but you're responsible for your actions from before 13. So it seems like, you know, it seems like, and who remembers what they did before they were 13? I mean, like, so you have to, like, all of a sudden, you become responsible with this whole like past that you barely, you know, you hardly even know. And the question is, why are you responsible or why aren't you responsible? If you're not responsible, so like, that's it, you're not responsible. Get on with your life. And if you are responsible, so so why does the responsibility start later? Doesn't make, you're responsible for your behavior before 13, but the responsibility begins at 13. Or 20, whatever you want to start counting. So what's the sense of that? The idea is the same idea. That man goes through this whole process of going, of growing up, of developing step by step, only to transcend that whole process, to transcend his own humanity, to transcend his own, his own. In the early years of his life, he's developing as a human being. And he's also developing as a spiritual being. That's what those early years of childhood are for. You're supposed to start teaching them a child Torah as soon as he can speak. You're supposed to, and very much a part of raising a child is teaching them how to function as a human being, how to behave, how to interact, how to be a social being. In these years, the person is developing as a human being, is developing as a spiritual being. But that's all leading up to Bar Mitzvah. That's all leading up to the time when he's supposed to become a divine being. Now, that's all a preparation. In other words, childhood exists not so that you should build your future on it. Childhood exists as a preparation for totally transcending childhood. Not just following, progressing on, but totally transcending your childhood, then turning around and making everything that's a part of you, that's a part of your past, to make that also divine. To bring divinity into every part of your being. Now, in your being are things from the past. You're made up of a lot of different parts. And a great deal of...